Thank Brother John for his reading. I come call upon Brother David to give us his talk entitled Abigail the Carmelite. Brother David.
Well, my dear brothers and sisters in Christ Jesus, thank you for asking me to come to talk to you about the scriptures. The history of David and his rise to become a king features one of his many wives, which he took, a woman called Abigail, whom we have just read of in 1 Samuel chapter 25. And what a woman she was, brothers and sisters. She was a stellar example of wisdom, discretion, and, as we shall see, of faith. Her name means the father of joy. And she was married to a man called Nabal. Now, Nabal was appropriately named because when we turn to verse 25 of our chapter, we see that as his wife eventually points out, his name means folly. Let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly. And folly is with him. So he was a fool by name, and he was unfortunately a fool by nature. In other words, he did foolish things, and it appears that his name became a byword for folly in the scriptures. If you turn to the 14th Psalm, just as an example, you will see that it begins, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God." And that is the word Nabal, except there it's used as an ordinary noun and not as a proper noun. And you'll see that it occurs in several psalms. Psalm 74 is one that I have noted in front of me. Psalm 74 and verse 22, I'll read it to you. "Arise, O God, plead thine own cause, remember how the foolish man reproacheth thee daily." And again, it's the identical word which was used as a name in the case of this man called Nabal. So we have a question. We find that Abigail was a woman of some character. When we look at verse 3 of our chapter, it points out the name of Abigail, and it says she was a woman of good understanding and of beautiful countenance, but the man was churlish and evil in his doings. So she was a woman of good understanding. She was a wise woman. And the question that I want to ask, especially of the sisters, but it's a rhetorical question, so you needn't answer it, is why do wise women marry foolish husbands? Well, you might have your own answers to that question, and well done for restraining yourselves, but this marriage that was made has all the hallmarks, brothers and sisters. Not that I want to conjecture about the scriptures, but it has all the hallmarks of an arranged marriage. In the East, in those days, as it is actually today, marriages are arranged. That is the ancient custom. And Nabal was a rich man, as we see in verse 2. His possessions were very great. And he was able, in verse 36, to furnish a feast fit for a king. So he rivaled Saul in his wealth. He was an extremely wealthy man, but he was a fool. And he illustrates, brothers and sisters, the maxim that we see in Job chapter 32 and verse 9. Great men are not always wise. So he was a great man, a rich man, but he wasn't a wise man. But because he was rich, he held a commanding position and he could afford a rich dowry. so he could buy effectively what he wanted. But Abigail, on the other hand, was intelligent, she was wise, and she was also of beautiful countenance. But my guess is that she came from a poor family. And in practical terms, given her family's circumstances and Nabal's undoubted wealth, a blind eye was turned upon his folly, and beauty and intelligence were put up for sale. And if that was the case, brothers and sisters, if it was the case, Abigail acquiesced to her parents' wishes, and she made the best of her lot in life, which was chosen for her by her parents. So, sisters, that was Abigail's excuse. What was yours? And what an example, brothers and sisters, she was of excellence in the position which she found herself in. Her example is timeless because marriages often reveal inequalities in spiritual terms. Just because women are commanded by the apostle to silence in the ecclesia doesn't mean that they are not wise. And if you trawl through the Old Testament scriptures, you will find references to many wise women. There were the wise women that made the tabernacle. There was the wise woman of Tekoa, the wise woman of Abel, the woman that holds the highest station in the Old Testament scriptures as a queen and an empress was Esther. So it doesn't mean that because you have to be silent, you're not wise. And therefore, brothers and sisters, it cannot be uncommon for wise women to be married to brethren who, if not fools, might certainly be lacking in perception. And that realisation should enlighten the minds and attitudes of brethren in Christ as to what a helpmeet really is. And the scriptures teach that what is born in secret will one day be rewarded openly. So what was Abigail to do? She was united in marriage with a foolish and an evil man, and she was obliged by the law of Eden to remain in this unequal union all her days. And there appears to have been no questioning, brothers and sisters, of this position in the mind of Abigail. And that's so different, brothers and sisters, to the modern attitude of marriage in the world around us. Marriage is seen in this world as being a transient and a temporary institution. But Abigail was obedient to the law of Moses, no matter what misfortune that brought upon her. Now, under the providential oversight of God, David and his men had come into contact with Nabal and his servants. In those days, the success of agriculture depended upon armed protection. The land of Israel simply wasn't safe. It was in a state of war with the Philistines, and no farmer or his crops or his possessions were safe from pillage or destruction. But Nabal found himself in a fortunate position because David and his men lived in the vicinity, and they protected the farmers from the bandits and robbers and brigands, hostile gangs and warlords that pervaded the country. And it's true that Nabal had not asked for that protection, but it is equally true that without it he would have either been ruined or he would have been dead. It's as simple as that, because that's the nature of the country and the times in which he lived. Now, when David asked for alms, or he asked for charity, we find in verse 10 and verse 12 that David was refused. His servants were refused, and it was refused with some gusto. Who is David in verse 10? And who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants now a days that break away every man from his master. This is a slave. This is not even a free man, he's a runaway. So not only did he refuse, but he also taunted David, claiming not to know who he was. Who is David? I don't even know who he is. What is this man? Do you think that was true? That he didn't know who David was? Well, we shall see later on. But that insult, brothers and sisters, of claiming not to know and of questioning parentage was later to be levelled at Jesus Christ. Let's go to the Gospel record of John in chapter 9. John chapter 9 and verse 29. We know that God spake unto Moses, as for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. And that's the same thing that Nabal had said to David through his servants. In reality, brothers and sisters, David was an anointed to be king. It was widely known, it really was widely known, that Samuel the great prophet who had just died had anointed David to be the king of Israel, and that he was the guardian of the remnants of the priesthood of Aaron, which had been massacred by Saul. And any man in Israel with any respect to divine things would never have turned away a request from David, the future king of Israel. But that's what Nabal did. And this put him in mortal danger, put him in danger of his life. Now, what happened next is extremely revealing as to the character of Abigail, because we see in verse 14 that when she heard of this, she gave her instructions, and the young men, verse 14, tells her what had happened, and we find that the complaint is made specifically to Abigail about what had happened. And it is evident that this servant knew his master, he knew what Nabal was like, but he also knew and he implicitly trusted the lady of the house, his mistress. He knew that Nabal and his entire house would be put to the sword, but he knew that his mistress was a wise woman and a woman whom he could trust. You can't buy that reputation. You can only earn it. And it must have been earned over a long period of time. So the house of Nabal must have seen a discreet difference between the ways of Nabal and the ways of Abigail. The servants knew that there was a profound difference between the mistress of the house and the master of the house. And that shows that this woman was steadfast. It would have been easy for her to have descended to the moral standards of her husband, but she had not. She had maintained her standard of righteousness, and she had maintained it in the face of all the evil ways of her husband. So, though through circumstance she dwelt in the house of folly, she resisted the spirit of folly. She was in the house of folly, but she was not of it. Now, next we see that her servants had implicit trust in what she said. In verse 18, she makes haste, she prepares food, and she says to her servants, "Go on before me, go, behold, I will come after you." And so she asked her servants to go and meet David with an enormous provision of food. How would you feel if you were a servant and you knew that one of the most dangerous men in the country was coming with an armed band? How would you feel about going to meet him? Because that's what Abigail required her servant to do. Many would demur from that, but this servant did exactly what he was told. You can't buy that sort of loyalty. You can only earn it. And her actions reveal one of the prime characteristics of the bride. Let's go now to Matthew's Gospel record in chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. And here in the Sermon on the Mount, we see that Jesus says, Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And that is what Abigail was doing. She had resolved to make peace with this warlord. She had no weapon. She had no strength. All she had was her wisdom and her humility. And armed with wisdom and humility, she went to make peace with David. She couldn't overcome him physically. She had no weapons. All she went with was her wit, her wisdom, her good understanding. Psalm 36 and verse 16. You see, we read these things, but we need to read and see what the character was that inspired these actions. Psalm 33 and verse 16. There is no king save by the multitude of an host. A mighty man is not delivered with much strength. Weapons were no use to this woman. But what it says in verse 18, behold, the eye of Yahweh is upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy. So she came and she met David in verse 23, and she fell on the ground. Abigail saw David, verse 23, she hasted and lighted off the ass and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground. And not only did she do that, when she begins to say something, she says in verse 24, upon me my Lord, and upon me let this iniquity be, and let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience and hear the words of thine handmaid. So we have a question now for the brethren. There's no need to answer it. I know the answer anyway. How many times has a woman prostrated herself before you and bowed down before you in your life? Thought so. And how many times has a woman, brethren, asked for permission to speak? I knew the answer to that question as well. This, seriously, brothers and sisters, infers two things. One, that she recognised David to be her king. And secondly, she was pledging her loyalty to him. She was treating him as if he was a king. If you read from verse 24 down to verse 31, used to work for a bank, and I can't count to save my life, but I would say about 14 times, something like that, you will see that Abigail calls David Lord, Master, Sovereign. 14 times. And 7 times she refers to herself as the handmaid. So that imitates the language of Sarah. Let's go to the first of Peter. The first of Peter chapter 3 and verse 6. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, so long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. About 14 or 15 times she calls him Lord. And that's what Sarah did to Abraham. And her reference to herself as the handmaid it makes her a type of the bride of Christ. So let's go now to Luke's Gospel record, chapter 1. Luke chapter 1 and verse 38. Mary said, behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word. So this is scriptural language which has connotations elsewhere in the New Testament. If you read, brethren and sisters, you read through the New Testament, you read it many twice a year, and you read it many times through your life, but the enemies of Christ, They never called him Lord. If you go through the Gospels and see who it is that calls him Lord, it's only ever those that acknowledge the right of Jesus to the throne of David. And the Pharisees wouldn't do it because they did not recognise the right of Jesus of Nazareth to David's throne. They wouldn't call him Lord. You go through, if you do that, I sometimes do looking for things and when I do my daily readings, and you notice that when you read through the Gospels next time, his enemies never call him Lord. And here's this woman calling David Lord, and it puts her as a type of the bride of Christ. So Abigail is presented to us, brothers and sisters, as the type of Yahweh's handmaid or bond slave, as the word means. And not only so, not only did she recognise David as her Lord, as a future king, but she was prepared to lay down her life for her husband. Verse 24, she fell at his feet and said, "Upon me, my Lord, and upon me let this iniquity be, and let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience. Let his sin fall upon me." She was prepared to lay down her life for Nabal. She did not, brothers and sisters, lay down her life or offer to lay down her life for a righteous man. Nor did she offer to lay down her life for a good man. Instead, she commended her virtue by offering to lay down her life for a sinner. And that, brothers and sisters, made her a type of the bride, a type of her master. Romans chapter 5, Romans 5 and verse 6. "For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." And that attitude, brothers and sisters, of being prepared to lay down your life for somebody who is a sinner, made Abigail a type of her master, an imitator of her master. And when she says in verse 24, "Upon me let this iniquity be," she was prepared to bear the iniquity of Nabal. And that made her also an imitator of Christ. The book of the prophet Isaiah, chapter 53. Isaiah chapter 53 and verse 5. "He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with our stripes he is healed." And verse 12, "He was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many." Abigail was an imitator of that attitude. So this action reveals that Abigail was a woman of considerable discretion. And in verse 25, we find that when she says, "Regard this man of Belial not, even Nabal," we see, brothers and sisters, that she did not reveal the true character and the true nature of her husband until he was in mortal danger. She did not denigrate his character until it was absolutely necessary, and when she did, she only did so with the purpose of saving his life. How many of us, brothers and sisters, can cover the sins of our brethren and sisters to that extent? Let's go to the book of Proverbs in chapter 17. Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 9. "He that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends." We're so good, aren't we, brothers and sisters, at repeating evil things. But Christ calls upon us to cover transgression. How many of us, brothers and sisters, have the fidelity to cover the transgressions of those we love? But how many of us, brothers and sisters, have the fidelity to cover the transgressions of those we don't love? That's what Abigail did. Now, more than this, in verse 33, she gave David advice which kept him back from sin. Verse 33, David says, "Blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou which has kept me this day from coming to shed blood and from avenging myself with my own hand." David had lost sight of the commandment in a moment of time, which said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." And this woman, by her wise counsel, was able to keep a king from committing sin. Actually, it was providence that had sent her. But that's by the by. She did this of her own free and of her own free will and of her own volition. She kept a king from committing sin. What a remarkable woman she was, who through humility and wisdom spoke a word in season to the wise. Do we believe, brothers and sisters, in the role of providence in our lives? And do we believe that Christ is powerful enough to keep us from committing sin? Let's go to a verse in the short epistle of Jude. And you'll see one of the things which Jude petitions for. Jude 24. "Now unto him that is able to keep you from falling." What does he mean? "Now unto him that is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy." What did Christ mean when he said, he taught us to pray, "Deliver us from evil"? And this is one of the petitions which we should offer in our prayers, that we that our feet should be kept from committing sin. Now, what was the basis, brothers and sisters, of the actions of this woman? What motivated her to bow before David and to pledge allegiance in front of him and to ask permission to speak? It was faith, brothers and sisters. There's no question about this. This is not conjecture or hypothecation. It was faith that made her do these things. Verse 28, "I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid, for Yahweh will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of Yahweh, and this evil hath not been found in thee all these days. Yet a man is arisen to seek thy soul, but the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with Yahweh thy God, and the soul of thine enemies shall he sling out as out of the middle of a sling. And it shall come to pass, when Yahweh shall have done according to my Lord, according to all the good that he hath spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel." That's faith, brothers and sisters. That is faith. She believed in the promises that had been made to David through Samuel. And she believed that God purposed to elevate him to the throne of Israel. She believed the historic accounts of David's exploits with the fighting of Goliath and the slaying of Goliath. She saw this as David fighting God's battles. She knew that promises had been made to David concerning his house, even though the prophet Nathan had not yet revealed the full extent of these. She knew that he was Yahweh's anointed, and that he had been given the throne, the right to the throne of God over Israel. And she knew, and she proclaims, that God was preserving David's life. And she makes this reference there, in verse 28, is it, to a sure house And that's a quotation. That comes from something, somewhere else. And it comes from the first book of Samuel, chapter 2, and verse 35. And it comes from what was said to Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 35. I will raise up unto me a faithful priest that shall do according to my heart, to all that is in mine heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house. That's where it comes from. And I believe that is referring to the king, the anointed one, rather than the priest, and he shall walk before me, mine anointed forever. So that's faith, brothers and sisters. Belief in what God has promised. Now let's think about a contrast here. Nabal was a churlish man. He claimed to not know who David was. He claimed to believe that he was a runaway slave. And yet his wife, who lived with him and lived in the same house, she recognised him as Yahweh's anointed, the champion of Yahweh, and the future ruler of Israel. And those two opinions coexisted in the same house. And that was the difference between Nabal and Abigail. The difference was faith. Faith in the prophetic words of Samuel that drove Abigail to do what she did. And she did what was necessary. She brought loaves, wine, sheep, corn, clusters of raisins and figs. She saw him hunger, brothers and sisters, and she fed him. She saw him thirsty and she gave him to drink. Matthew's Gospel record, chapter 25 and verse 37. This makes her a type of those that will inherit eternal life. Matthew 25 and verse 37. Then shall the righteous answer, saying, Lord, when saw we hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? Well, that's what Abigail did. Now, those actions of Abigail left a deep impression upon David. Let's go back to 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 39. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, Blessed be the Lord, blessed be Yahweh, that have pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and have kept back his servant from evil. Deliver us from evil. For Yahweh hath returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head. And David sent to commune with Abigail to take her to him to wife. So he recognised those attributes of faith, humility and loyalty. And he took this wife to herself. And although she was to be highly exalted, and she was to become the wife of a future king, what does she promise to do in verse 41? Let thine handmaid be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. And in that, brothers and sisters, she stands as an imitator of Jesus Christ. John's Gospel record, chapter 13. John 13 and verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. And he poured the water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet. This woman, prophetically speaking, was an imitator of Christ. When she was caught by David, she hasted to meet him in verse 26. Sorry, I think it's verse 42 I need. She hasted and arose and rode upon an ass with five damsels of hers that went after her. And that appears, brothers and sisters, to be alluded to by Christ in one of his parables. So I'd like you now to turn to Matthew chapter 25. Here we see a bride coming to a marriage, accompanied with five damsels. And that seems to me to be the basis of the parable of the wise, five wise virgins. Matthew 25 and verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins which took their lamp and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And verse 6. At midnight there was a cry, and the bridegroom cometh, go out to meet him. And we know that there were five that were ready. The five damsels that accompanied Abigail as she went to meet her king. And so the exhortation to us is to be like the five wise virgins who went with Abigail to meet the Lord in the day of his coming. You might think, brothers and sisters, you might be tempted to think that Abigail's trials were now over. David took her to wife, and she became the queen elect over Israel. But Abigail's trials were not over. Although she was in waiting, the bride of a king, and although she had left behind everything that she had, the riches of Carmel and the lives that she had known, she was eventually to become a stranger and a pilgrim in a foreign land. She counted the riches of Nabal as nothing in order to win her husband. But worse was to befall her, because when we go to the first book of Samuel, chapter 30, we find that she was kept at a town called Ziklag in relative safety from Saul. And there was a raid upon that city by the Philistines, and Abigail was taken captive. The first of Samuel chapter 30 and verse 1. David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, and the Amalekites had invaded the south, and Ziklag was smitten and burned with fire. And David's, verse 5, David's two wives were taken captive. Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal, the Carmelitess. So she really was a true type of the bride of Christ. She was now a stranger and a pilgrim and a captive in a strange land. But David, brothers and sisters, her bridegroom, adventured everything. He adventured everything he had, including his life, to save his bride. And so he came upon those that had taken her with an army, a small army, and he recovered her again. Verse 19, there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that they had. David recovered them all. He had laid down his life for his wife. To be the bride, brothers and sisters, of the anointed requires self-sacrifice. It requires discretion. It requires selflessness. It requires wisdom and fortitude. And all those qualities were the qualities of Abigail, the bride of David.